There we are. Now we're live. My side didn't say live. We'll get this figured out.
This is what happens when you're live and direct with the first episode of the Barbecue Nerd Podcast.
Yeah,
very excited to be here tonight with you, Frank.
Me too, buddy. We've been talking about this for weeks now, and I'm super glad we got her done. A little bit about our reasons for doing this is because we don't do it, and so we decided to do it. That's just kind of how it came around. Where do you see all the numbers? I see one guy watching there.
That's either you or I that's showing up right now. You know that we're focused on our own show.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited, man. This is the very first episode of the Barbecue Nerd Podcast, like you said. And how long did it take us to pick that name out?
We spent considerable amount of time. Seconds.
Seconds. That's how things go.
That's the way that with barbecue, things are low and slower. They're hot and fast. Tonight, yeah, we went very fast and very hot.
Yeah, I think I was sitting at the peninsula up there eating my dinner, and I was like, hey, dude, we ever going to do that podcast? And you were like, yeah, man, we ought to do that podcast. And we kicked it around a little bit, and then I was like, hey, we ought to do that podcast tonight. And you were like, okay, let's go. I was like, all right, what are we going to call it? You said.
With so many ideas flowing back and forth, it was found that eventually we would come up within seconds with the right name.
Yeah. Barbecue Nerds. So let's see. Now we got to make up, like, for the guys watching, we got to make up. Hit us in the comments there if you're watching on YouTube at Smokeslinger, on YouTube at Real Meat Stick, or on Facebook, Smokeslinger Pits. If you're watching us there, help us come up with the little tagline thing we got to come up with, or no, the intro saying. Welcome to the Barbecue Nerd Podcast. This podcast is intended for only the nerdiest barbecue guys in the planet. That's all this is for, right? A little bit funny, a lot of fun. I don't know if anything goes, but maybe close.
I think that a lot will be going. The first thing that's going down is with any good barbecue, you got to crack open a cold one. It's time for the first one of the evening. There we go. Enjoy a Miller latte.
There we go. Yep. But yeah, so I'm not sure that anything goes. We did throw around the word unplugged or something. What was the word you used?
I think we're going unfiltered.
Unfiltered.
We might have to add a couple of filters in depending upon the type of audience we have coming in.
Yeah. So I guess the unfiltered part means any topic can go, such as, but not limited to, fat cap up, fat cap down, shiny side of the foil in, shiny side of the foil out, all those highly charged debates that can happen. I don't know if you've been in some of the flame wars on the old barbecue forums or not, like I have. We had flame wars over the silliest crap.
It's consistent. It even gets down to whether or not beans are appropriate in your traditional chili.
That's probably the most heated, I think. Beans and chili. And depends on where you're at, I guess. You're not supposed to say at. Well, I said, I guess, after at. So it's okay. Don't end your sentence with a preposition. I said, I don't know if it depends on where you're at. I guess, comma, I guess. Yeah. So.
Well, you'll hear people say, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. So if you take somebody that's from, say, the Northeast, where we're used to putting beans and chili, so that's where I'm from. But if I'm coming to you from Kaufman, Texas, it's where I'm at.
See, I got that. Yeah. So, yeah, any kind of topic matter can go. We intend to keep a clean show for little ears, just because we want to be friendly to all the guys out there, not just the gals or guys or whatever. And then, you know, like, I think tonight, Dave, the topic we picked out was brisket, right?
That's what we're going with. We're going to talk about brisket. We're going to discuss the techniques, the tips, and pit secrets. And I'll tell you, Frank, earlier today, I actually put out a post on making, for the Super Bowl, brisket sliders. So very relevant to tonight's topic.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So brisket breakdown, techniques, tips, and pit secrets related to brisket.
Correct.
Yeah. Cool, man. So Dave's background here, for those of you that don't know, at Real Meat Stick, you should follow his YouTube channel. I'll do the intro. I'll do your intro there, Dave. He is an actual legit butcher. So I can't think of anybody that is more technically diverse when it comes to this kind of stuff that I know. And be great. It's going to be great to talk about breaking down briskets tonight. I know that, you know, brisket is probably one of the most discussed topics on the YouTubes. As far as, like, you know, people do a video, of course, they're going to do a brisket video at some point. I've been wanting to do a brisket video on the Smoke Slinger lately, because that cooking method on there, there's about 8 different methods you can use on the Smoke Slinger to cook a brisket, and they're all fun, I think. So, but yeah, so we'll talk about some different cooking techniques. We'll also talk about, you know, some different tips and tricks, like when you get into wrapping and the slicing and different stuff like that as well. Give a couple shout outs here real quick. Is that okay, Dave?
Of course it is.
Daddy Dutch, appreciate you, brother. So glad you joined us. Ain't seen you since the Royal. A Real Meat Stick in the house. Lone Bull Barbecue. Are you still sunning at the beach, Dave?
I'm underneath the lamps right now.
Ice storm outside. Let's see. Brother Tall Beer Man here. Got to say hey to Jason. 43rd Parallel Barbecue. They got an awesome all-purpose sweet heat rub that I use frequently. There you go. Frank, where is your beer? Hey, Jason, believe it or not, this is the very last of the yellow Hoppy Rabbit beer. What is the name of that? I can't remember. I don't have a can in front of me. From, I think it's Lake something or other Brewing up in Wisconsin. And yeah, it's really, 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 really good. I've been saving this one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where's yours, Jason? So
great question.
Jason's on the Facebooks. Anyway, go ahead there. What you got, Dave?
So, you know, it was interesting what you brought up when we're talking about, you know, the butchering of a brisket. I guess I'll just jump right into it. It happens to be the pectoral muscles of the steer. And breaking this down, as we've seen many a times, there's that competition brisket. There's that restaurant style where we begin to round it off and we get rid of the deckle fat, we get rid of the mohawk. And then there's the backyard cook, where we're looking to be able to use as much of that meat as possible when we're putting this onto our at-home cooker, whether we're dealing with our offsets or we're dealing with our pellet cookers or we're dealing with our charcoal-fired cookers. So there's so many different modalities to the way that right from the beginning, if we're dealing with a pack of brisket, how we're going to do our trim and what we're going to do with our trim if it's left over. Just thinking right now, you know, with the brisket's going to be cooking up starting tomorrow for Sunday Super Bowl, I'm most likely going to do a very light trim. I don't mind taking the fat cap off, especially that deckle fat. I'm going to take that, render it down. That's my tallow. But I'm most likely leaving that, I'm going to leave that mohawk on, and I'm probably not going to do that full rounded shape because the presentation is not for a restaurateur where I have somebody coming in and they're looking at it and everything has to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to have as much meat as possible while at the same time understanding that when I go from the flat to the point, that we're going to go from a very thick portion and narrow it down. So, oh, my finger's going the wrong way. Very thick portion to a very narrow portion. However, we're able to maintain that by rotating our briskets around, using different foils, for example, to be able to block that heat. And eventually, when we get to the right temperature, we wrap it to be able to keep that moisture in. A competition brisket would be completely different because we're going for that one bite. We're going for that aesthetic value. Mm-hmm. So the at-home consumer like myself, like I'm doing this weekend, I'm going to want to get as much of that meat on there as possible while minimizing the amount of trim that, of course, I would use later on for sausage or something else.
Yeah. You know, you said something. I'm going to back you up a little bit. You said something a minute ago. Now, I live in Missouri. We're in cattle country. You know, I have never really worked in depth with cattle. Okay. But what you said is that's the pectoral muscle of the steer. Why did you say steer instead of heifer or cow or bull or what? Tell me why you said steer.
It just happens to be that when I've had interactions with
cattle ranchers, or steers.
But when I've had interactions with ranchers, they call those heads of steer. They don't. The bull is brought in to mate.
He's old.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah, but still just as edible. You know, it's a term that I'm used to using instead of saying the heifer and the bull. The heifer is the cow that we're going to break down. That's the cattle on the ranch that's going to be broken down for us to be able to consume. Not that the bull isn't used. The bull is used, but typically because of the amount of testosterone that's raging through the muscles, it could be that much tougher.
Cocker Bill.
Correct. You know, one of the big myths that are out there, and in the United States, this is what we do. We typically send our steer to slaughter at about 3 to 3.5 years of age. Whereas what we find in countries like Europe, they'll age these cows out to 15 to 18 years of age. In fact, the top steakhouse in the world, located in Spain, is known for raising cattle that are the size of oxen. And they are 15 to 18 years of age. And you know, when you come to think of it, what is it that they know? What is it that they're doing over there? You know, besides the antibiotics and things like that, and then grain feeding them when we send them to the feed stocks, why is it that they're allowing their cattle to get that much more up there in age? Is it because it allows the fat to marbleize that much more? Does it give the cow that much more age to be able to mature on the bone? Similar to, no offense, with human beings, that when we start with, you know, as a child, we're much more small and tender, almost like veal. But as we get older in age, our muscle tone begins to change. We become soft and tender again in our older age. And it starts to invoke that thought process of, instead of taking something at adolescence or at a teenage years, we take it later on in age, and it's a well-aged animal, which makes it that much more tasty.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I'll be dang. Yeah. We've always talked about going ahead and trying to butcher up a cow or a whole cow ourselves around here, you know, but dang, is that a lot of work?
I mean, a lot of work,
you know,
boy, you got a ton of meat in front of you too.
Yeah.
Literally a ton of meat.
You got to deal with all that somehow. Yeah. So yeah, we always opted out. Hogs are a lot easier to deal with, you know, but anyway. Yeah. Cool. So as far as that goes, you know, you got two muscles on a brisket. You got the point and the flat. Which part, if you could help us out, which part is the point? Is it the top side, like up in the farther in the chest, or is it down closer to the bottom of the brisket, like down towards the belly fat? Where is that?
Very interesting. So when we're looking at the meat, exactly as you had mentioned, coming up against the breastbone, we have our flat right up here towards the shoulder, then coming down into the point.
So the point,
it's more meaty up top, and then it comes down into that point portion where it gets a little flatter. Correct.
Yeah, that's at the belly section. So
yes.
So that would make sense because the cow's walking around and he's moving this pectoral muscle and it's getting worked out. So it's a lot leaner. Lot tougher, I suppose. Is that true? Is that how that works?
Well, there's certainly more activity of that muscle, and when the muscle is used more often, it does tend to right off the board. It's going to be tougher. Which is why when we look at like the fillet, when we're looking at our tenderloins, the muscles that aren't used that often are the ones that are much more tender.
Yeah. Here's a question. Lone Bull wants to know, do you recommend buying a calf or steer if you do a bulk purchase? What do you say, Dave? I know what I was going to say, but I'll let you answer.
All right. So here's the thing. When you're talking a bulk purchase, I'm wondering if you're talking about when I'm buying
a full animal,
hanging on the hook. Well, if you're going to buy a full animal and you're going to raise it on your own, then you get the calf. Raise the calf. Obviously, you're going to be out there grass fed because they're grazing. And then you send it out to the feedlots, where they'll fatten it up on all the grain. So if I was purchasing an animal that I'm ready to butcher, I'm going to take the aged steer. versus the calf, which is, you know, at a young age is when properly vetted, let's say, is going to be your veal.
Yeah. So they butcher heifers too, I believe, sometimes. Correct. Don't they? Just depends if they're not going to make cow pairs or yes. whatever. Yeah. So he said he bought a half a calf last year and a half steer this year, bulk purchase at a processor. Yeah. Yeah. So someone else raised this animal is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would lean way towards a steer, you know, because they're going to be castrated. You know, it's not going to be like you're going to miss out on a lot of that testosterone building and all that stuff. And then, like you said, yeah, definitely finish on grain, you know, get that fat rolling in there. That's what we're looking for. Intramuscular fat.
Correct.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
That marbleization that we see with those that get grass fed, and I'm going to, you know, just use a different region of the world. When we're looking at the beef that's coming in from Argentina, Brazil, or even here in the United States, where people are very proud that it's grass fed, you don't get the same type of marbleization. So to get that USDA prime, to get that type of level, that's rarely seen outside of those cattle that are sent to feedlots. And then it also does come down to the genus and species of the cattle that you're consuming, such as, you know, when we're looking at a Holstein cattle, completely different than if we're talking about Angus or talking about Wagyu, or we're talking about Longhorn, or even like the, you know, very popular that are being utilized now, especially in California, well, more in the Holstein family, the milk cattle. They've actually found that when these cows have gotten to that point where they're not producing milk anymore, that they are now being used for meat consumption. Although, namely here in the United States, we do tend to lean very heavily upon the Angus, that being CAB certified Angus beef, and your top choice CAB in many cases can be just as good as your prime.
Yeah. You know, the best hamburger I ever had in my life, I think, was we bought a Satay. I think it's how you say, I know I'm a butcher. It's Satay, I think is what it is. It's a black cow that's got white face and like black eyes. And you see them a lot around where I'm at. We took that whole cat, that whole steer, and ground him up in a hamburger, that entire thing. I mean, ribeyes, freaking all of it. Loins. It was an entire cow made into hamburger. Dude, it was insane. It was a good, he was fed outright. My buddy, Paul Hance, shout out to Paul Hance down the road. It was out of his herd. I believe a buddy of mine got it, and insane. If you're ever just having a wild hair and you decide you really want to have some really great ground beef and it's worth like $8 a pound to you, like totally worth it. So, I mean, you're going to have a lot of waste if you do that, because if you have it processed by a butcher, he's in speed cut mode. He's not like trying to scrape every little bit off the bones. And that's where our cost went, was in the bones. They didn't clean the bones good enough, you know, because we're making hamburger, you know, but he don't want to sit there and grind through all that stuff that comes off, you know, when you clean them bones off. I don't know. You got more experience with that than I do, but you know, it's a lot of knife trimming. Like what if I was making hamburger?
Yeah. That comes down to, so there's many ways to look at this. Yeah. So the amount of time that you spend when you're breaking down an animal, all that has to be figured into the cost. The other thing that gets figured in is when we're looking at waste, anything that's red is money in the garbage. So we try to use as much of that to keep as much red meat on versus anything that's going to be a tendon, any fat, anything that is connective material. So when we're grinding, a lot of that grind may include all those little pieces that are left over in mm-hmm. order to recoup the cost. Mm-hmm. In the restaurant industry, it's very easy to be able to get portion control pieces, but you know, that cost is then passed on to the consumer. So yeah. When we've dealt with restaurants in the past that are looking to save cost, they'll take primals and subprimals and break them down on their own. And some of your best steakhouses out there take it just like that. They have a bandsaw that they use. They'll cut their own short loins. Obviously, first they dry age those short loins, most cases 40 days. That's pretty typical. And the fat that's on the outside, now that it's grown that mold that from the bacterium, that's not usable. So the initial weight of whatever that piece was, that wet weight, is then figured into the cost later on after all the trim is taken off and the meat is weighed. So that's okay. Why it costs that much more on the plate. Typically, you know, even if someone took a hanging piece of short loin today, it's going to be three times whatever that cost is to them. So if it's $20 a pound, then on your plate it's 60. Once it's dry aged, you're looking at closer to $80 to $100 for that same steak per pound. Wow.
That's insane. Hey, real quick, shout out here. Brother Carlton, how you doing, buddy? Welcome aboard, Brother
Carlton. Carlton joining us this evening.
Yeah, he just joined gentleman. The Smoke Slinger. He's on the pro staff there. Welcome aboard, brother. Appreciate you.
Cheers.
Yeah, we gotta cheers that one there. Anyway, here we go. So to get back into the brisket side of things. So whenever we're dealing with a brisket, of course, when I say brisket, I'm talking about a packer brisket, right? I'm talking about, I want it to be more than 14 pounds ideally, because I'm going to trim that thing down for aerodynamics and stuff like that. So we're talking a whole packer brisket for the new guys is a brisket that is intact, boneless, which I never understood that because I don't get it. I'll have to ask you that in a minute. But the flat, which we just determined is up here in the upper chest, and then the point, which is down in the belly region down in there, right, Dave? And then correct. Fat cap on, right? So tell us why they call it boneless beef brisket. I mean, of course there's a bone there, but what bone is it? The chine bone?
So you have the breastplate that's in there.
Yeah, that's the chine right in here.
Correct. So yeah. What I've done beforehand, I've brought them back here and actually shot I did a video, or I may have just put some pictures up where the entire piece came in wrapped in butcher paper, which is what butcher paper is really used for, even though we use it for smoking raw meat. Correct. And I took that and I broke it down and I deboned it. There's quite a bit of waste, but the cost for me to get it whole like that is far less because nobody's fabricated that at that point. When you go out and you get it and it's in a cryo pack, and just one step forward here, what we're talking about, people see meat in a cryo pack and they see some graying on the outside. That graying that you see is from the vacuum pack machine, the heat that's generated that seals it into the bag. There's nothing wrong with that. We all trim it off, but there's nothing that's inedible about that piece of meat, that it's the reason why it's gray. It's not that it's oxidized, which is one reason why meat changes color, or that it bled out in the wrong way, just as a precautionary tale. But that's there. I would love to do this one point. It's going to come up. I'm going to take the entire piece. I'm probably going to just trim the fat down and do a bone-in brisket for everybody, because I think that's fabulous for people to see. It's another myth that we can dispel that as far as a bone-in brisket.
Yeah, so that's just the chine bone, like we cut off a slab of spares, right?
Correct.
That's crazy. I've never seen it on intact ever. So that's gonna definitely, that would be a cool video to do now that everybody's watching. Is just like, let's cook one with it on. Let's just see what turns out. That's really cool.
The only thing I have to do is when I go to pick that up, I have to make sure that either the purveyor that I get it from or myself when I go in, I haven't hit it with the stamp. The ink that's in that is edible ink. From the visuals, we don't want to see that blue or purplish ink that's marked on there that says USDA Prime or my own mark on it.
Yeah, that's cool. So, okay, so bone off, right? Where does it live on the point and flat?
Well, you're right here. That's the chest bone. That's right there. Yeah. So if you were to split your chest,
it's on the edge of the flat.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Okay. And then, like Dave pointed out about the gray area that we always see on a brisket, it's not going bad. That's not like a bad spot. I actually heard that whenever they bring the side of beef in, I don't know what they do to it with scalding water or something is what I heard at Cargill. But you're saying it's from the vacuum, from whenever they cryovac, because it's up against the spot that's sealing right there.
Correct.
Okay, yep. That makes more sense to me. I can't imagine some guy in there with 180-degree water spraying down a freaking side of beef. I can't understand that, you know.
No, every morning, not necessarily every night, but every morning, every piece of machinery in a meat factory has to be broken down and cleaned. Even when, you know, things are coming in, hanging beef, and it comes in to a purveyor that I'm pretty close with. I've been in there. All the union butchers, when they're done, everything gets broken down. Everything gets cleaned up. That's the process at the end. It's not done while production is happening.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. And so now we're getting into the construction of the brisket. Let's talk about that a little bit. So we've got the deckel, which the deckel is just that hard fat, right?
Correct.
That's underneath. It's on the bottom of the flat, right? And it kind of goes up into that inside fat in between the point and the flat. But that fat that's in between turns soft the farther you go in. Explain that a little bit, how that fat.
So what I think you're talking about when we get, and let's just get into muscle fibers. So for example, we might may have muscle fibers that go this way, and then suddenly there's another set that comes this way. So there's a layer of fat that's in between these two.
In between.
Correct. Some places and it comes out to culture. It also comes down to the chef that's preparing will take their knife, and in between they'll separate the two. So you have a point and you have a flat. And those, instead of having those muscles run on top of each other, that's done sometimes because we want to be able to cook just a certain part of that brisket. And then other times it's easier to prepare two different cuts of meat, especially later on when you're slicing it up. So that way you're not slicing, you know, this one this way, and then you've got to turn your whole piece of meat and then slice the other way.
Yeah.
That fat in between, you know, is known as the collagen. And that collagen, when we cook our meat to the right temperature, when we render that fat down, becomes gelatin. So that's the fat that's holding it together. It's the collagen in between two different muscle fibers that are held together. And sometimes if it's not done properly, it looks gray on the inside, or it can be still a little bit tacky. But done properly, done to perfection, that collagen will become gelatin. And that's that deliciousness that when it hits our tongue, we get that great mouth feel.
Yeah.
And in fact, when people on YouTube and elsewhere, they'll squeeze down on their meat, you'll see all that juice flowing out. That's because they've done the process properly.
So when they say deckel on, which part are they saying is still on?
The deckel on is would be that right
hard
before
fat.
Before the mohawk, there'd be that whole chunk of fat right here. They left that deckel fat right on.
Okay, so wait a minute. So terminology is still escaping me then.
Yes.
So in the past, this is a guy that's been cooking a freaking lot of briskets, right? Talking that doesn't know the terminology, so it's okay if you laugh at me. The deckel, I have always thought that was the hard fat that was like from the bottom of the on the flat. Mm-hmm. Going up into where the point and the flat come together, then it turns to collagen. But you're saying it's up on top.
So that large chunk surrounds that whole deal. Correct, and it actually comes towards the mohawk, that's the deckel fat, the interconnective fats that are in between the point and the flat. That's that collagen fat that we're rendering down into gelatin. The deckel fat is what's coming towards that mohawk.
Okay. Oh, okay. So it's on the other side. I got you. So if the fat cap is up, we're looking at the mohawk go around to that pocket that everybody wants to cut out. Right. That's the deckel.
Yes.
Okay. So when they say deckel off, does that just simply mean that they cut most of the point off?
That means that a little bit more for someone who hand trimmed that for you and got that off. That's done right there
at the tractor plant. I don't want nobody touch it.
No, you take it on. That's correct. You take that on, and then you trim that. The packer plants will do whatever however that meat needs to be fabricated.
You know, dude, like there's a ton of like processing guys around here, little mom and pop shops. And I tell you, I still 100% think we're better off just to go to Walmart or Sam's or whatever and just buy a case of briskets than to have a whole animal slaughtered, because they will turn that thing into grandma's soup bone is what they will do. They will cut that thing into, what do you call the cuts that are like completely processed? Is that not market cut? What is that called?
I just say
like
that
it would get a brisket that's like this big. The guy just completely, absolutely decimated this thing. I don't want to buy it. What do you call that? That's that kind of cut.
I call that retail butcher. Point because when you go around.
Well, I'm just saying with anything, they take a whole ribeye, right? And they cut the spinalis first. It's like, oh my God. Like no lie. Somebody did that to my ribeyes. They just, oh, it's a fat vein. Let's cut that. Yeah. Now there's no spinalis on my ribeye. Right. And so that's the guy I'm talking about. These local yokel butchers that don't know, like when I say a packer brisket, they're thinking, oh, you want a very nice square, very thin, whole brisket flat. You know what I'm saying? Right.
Yeah. Okay. They fabricated that to what they think is ideal for someone who doesn't know what to do with it.
Exactly. That's my point.
You also brought up a good point. So let's go back to that idea that you explored of a Sam's Club, because Sam's Club is very unique. They may be the club version of a Walmart, but the meat that they're bringing it many times, you're able to get top cab. That's in some cases, that little difference in a price between the prime and the choice, some of that top cab that's coming in choice is just as good, if not better, than the prime.
It is.
So when this is just like a very small difference in price, go for the prime.
30 cents.
When it's a significant difference, look at those briskets. Go through them. Pick them up. Look at the point. Look at the deco fat. Are you getting a 19-pound brisket, or are you really getting a 15-pounder because there's 4 pounds of fat in there and all this other trim? So, it's a very interesting perspective that you brought up. Sam's Club is excellent when it comes when they come to the pricing on their prime briskets. They're also great when it comes to universal size. Yeah. And if you're someone that's shopping at the same store all the time and you get to know the people that are there, they'll even give you the opportunity when they're breaking up a case to let you, get the inside look so that you can get that case the way that you want it. And then they'll just reprice it with the correct weight. So when you're walking out, you've got 4 to 5 great briskets, top briskets that you're bringing home with you.
Sometimes if you go buy like a thing of donuts on the way into Sam's and then you walk back to the meat guy and you ring the bell and you hand him the donuts first and say, hey, can I pick through the boxes of brisket? Then he'll like bring 2 boxes out or 3 and you can just kind of like pick through. You just got to take care of the butcher guy.
Correct.
Donuts, kind of help a little bit sometimes.
Correct. One of the other things, not a brisket, but still, talking about Sam's Club and meats, is Sam's Club gets those really nice center cut dino ribs that are in. Now, you'll never see them in the case in front of you because they've already cut them down to flanking ribs or they've cut them down to short ribs. But if you go onto the Sam's Club app or you ask the butcher in the back or their staff if you can get them, they'll come out with the whole case. You can get that full bone in, plate rib, which is outstanding. There's 2 to a pack. There's, I believe, let me see, 1, 2. There's 4 to a pack, which is, it's a great bargain if you can get it. Bring those home, put those on your smoker, and boy, everybody's happy that night.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so back to brisket. Oh, here we go. Hang on a minute. Bruce is in the house, correctional officer. How you doing, brother? Appreciate you. There was one more thing here. Carlton's jealous. He's at work. He wishes he could have a beer. Carlton also said that we were talking about they cut off that. They absolutely cut the best part of the, like, all of it off the top, and then they keep it for themselves. And then the Lone Bull said he's going to remember that donut tip right there. That's how people in the Midwest think. I don't know how about everybody else, but we're just like, what can I bribe this guy with? Everybody down here likes donuts. Let's roll. You know, anyway. So getting back into brisket, I'm still interviewing you here. Okay, so I'll tell you what I do and see what you think. So I personally have cooked multiple different styles of brisket. There's competition brisket that I cooked back in the day that people would laugh at me about today. There's competition brisket that we trim today. And then there's the brisket I trim for real, like if I'm going to eat it. So we'll start with the good one first, the brisket that I'm going to trim whenever I eat it. Just a backyard brisket, but I do more of a Texas style. I like a whole packer. I want it to be minimum like 14 pounds. Like you're going to trim off quite a bit of fat. I went to the Jeremy Yoder School of Trimming a Brisket on his YouTube channel. And I really like the way that he put it together with mercilessly trim it. And I know that he heard this from other guys too, is the piece that you trim that whole mohawk off, right? And we're going for airflow. And you take that mohawk and you're just like, it's going to be a star somewhere else, right? Because if you leave it on the brisket, it's just going to like almost with intense heat coming down from an offset or even on a smoke slinger fat cap down for a while, you're going to wind up with that thing blossoming and kind of like opening up and it's going to get dry and the bark isn't really going to be amazing. Not that it's not going to be a good bite, but it's going to be like, it's just going to be the most intense part right there, I think. So I flatten that thing off on that point. And I like to leave as much fat on as possible around in there. I don't get worried about like getting totally down to a quarter of an inch, but you know, I like to get quarter inch, 3/8 of an inch of fat cap. Don't like any bald spots on top of the brisket if I can help it. And then on the point, I do tend to get a little more trim on that just because I want the squishy good burn ends. And I know that I'm going to have a ton of fat down inside also. So, cause I'm not splitting that thing at all. And then I round that whole thing off. No points. I don't want any pointy spots at all. What do you think, Dave? What's your method on a backyard brisket?
So backyard brisket, and it's interesting because I had mentioned in the beginning about doing minimal trim. I do get that fat cap down. That's important because later on when we're going to slice this up and eat it, I don't want to be biting through all this fat. And I do want the seasoning to also be able to penetrate through. If you have too much fat on there, the salt initially when you're putting it on with your dry rub will not be able to penetrate into the meat and be able to pull some of that water out. So I just like yourself, I will bring that fat cap down. With regards to the mohawk, it's very easy to be able to, again, take a piece of tin foil, put it over the top so that you're not getting that whole blossoming drying out. On the other hand, simply trimming that down and taking portions of that and then using it later on for chopped meat. Brisket hamburgers are delicious. Or preparing that separately, just as a snack item, because 16 hours waiting for a piece of meat, you know, you get a little hungry as a gentleman. So yeah. I need something to eat. So I'll cook that separately. But again, you know, for this weekend coming up, Super Bowl Sunday, I'm probably not going to do a heavy trim. Nobody's putting their eyes on it, staring at it and telling me that it doesn't look like a perfect meteor. It's not rounded and aerodynamic and it doesn't have that everything that it needs to be beautiful.
Man, I look for the beautiful. That's what I do.
Here's the thing. So when it comes to what, you know, where you're going with this, the next step is when I had brought in the dry rub. Prior to that, not necessarily a secret, we all kind of know this one, that in competition barbecue, we tend to inject our meats. We add additional beefy flavor to it. There's a possibility I may be doing something similar to that to add that extra oomph to it. So not a consomme. I have something that's called, it's called Better Than Bouillon, which again, available at your Costco and your Sam's Club and elsewhere. And it's like a paste and you reconstitute that paste with hot water. And then I'll take that along with some other seasoning and gently, gingerly inject that brisket and swell it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you have to be careful because the salt content is fairly high. So you know, with when doing that and then allowing it to sit on a cookie rack and, you know, drip dry for a little bit and then put a dry rub on, keep in mind, you're using if you're using any type of rubs that have salts on the outside, you've already put salts onto the inside. Yeah. So that salt on salt can be a little bit too salty.
Yeah.
If you're going to go about this method, you have to, you know, remember if you're making your own rub, that's one thing. Like if you're doing SPG, easy on the salt, you can still go with the pepper and the garlic. But if you're using a commercial rub where you don't know the percentage of salt that you're using, you can truly oversalt your brisket and then ruin that flavor later on, especially if you're using any type of finishing sauces when you're making sliders.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I'm an SPG guy all the way. I do like to once in a while mix in some other top layer, which that's another whole episode there. Maybe next time is talk about layers. I like that conversation a lot. But anyway, I do like to put, like, I don't know, if I'm using Plowboys, I'll use Bovine Bold. You know, I'll splatter a little bit of that on there. Another great one is Sweet Swine of Mine. It has a pretty good brisket rub. I try to stay away from the rubs that have, like, what's that stuff? Allspice. It just sticks out like a sore thumb to me. I don't really like it. That's in, I want to say, a lot of steak rubs and stuff. There's an old school rub that I really like that I've gotten so many calls using, was the Slabs Wow Your Cow. Only the OGs know about that one, from my buddy Kyle and Steffi in Kansas City. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of the way I do it. And then I do not inject. Now, getting into competition real quick before we start answering some questions. By the way, if you guys have questions, drop them in the chat. No matter what platform you're on, we'll see them over here before we wrap up here. But on the competition briskets, you know, the most popular thing these days is to split your brisket point and flat. And you want to get those trimmed as even as possible. Like, you want them to look structurally perfect, almost like a work of art, and perfectly square. Matter of fact, even like if you watch, there's a guy, if you're into competition barbecue and you want to see somebody that will expose all of his secrets, which is, he's such a great guy, is Bill Purvis from Chicken Fried Barbecue. Bill Purvis is just absolutely crushing it right now on the KCBS and some of the Texas circuits as well. But he exposes everything on his Instagram over there. And, you know, you're basically getting a piece of brisket flat that will fit inside of a clamshell, a standard clamshell, because you're only turning in, you know, 6 to maybe 12 slices. That's it. It's a one bite contest. And then on your point, he actually takes that point and trims it in half and then makes perfect cubes out of that. And then at this point, you got to get as much flavor into that one bite as you possibly can. Because if you don't know which bite, which judge is going to get, and you don't know which seat at the table is going to be the one that's going to hit you hardest with the mean comments. And so you're really trying to get the best average barbecue out of everybody out there. And then you get that one little QB bite. And Darren Worth always told me, he said he walks around with a couple of his burnt ends. That's Iowa Smoky D's. Anyway, he always walks around with a couple of his burnt ends. And he goes to somebody next to him and he'll have them take a bite. And he's like, watches their expression. And if their eyes are like this, he'll turn it in that day. But if they don't really have a change, he won't turn it in. He'll just turn in the flat, you know. And so anyway, that's a little bit about competition brisket. The guys on the Outlaws and the Jambos and all of that, they got this microwave shelf and they're trying to swell that brisket up, you know. Some of the can guys cook on drums and stuff. You have any experience with competition brisket?
Yeah, I do. I did the KCBS. I did that a while back. We did the competitions. I worked alongside the caterer. It wasn't my catering business. It was his. So any awards, anything like that, always went to his business. For me, it was always just, you know, a hobby. It was a challenge. I loved it. So yeah, I did that for a while. We traveled around and we had the 250 gallon pit and everybody played a role in the show when the show would come to town.
Less is more with competition barbecue. That's what I learned out of all the $800 weekend contests I cooked. That cost $800. I didn't make $800.
Right.
All of those contests, I learned, take it easy. whoever is the most laid back and average is the one that's going to get their name called. So got anything else you want to add about brisket?
Well, you know, you brought up the competition side and some of the judges. It seemed like sometimes there was an intrinsic bias based upon those that were out there on the road and traveling nationwide versus those that were in the same contest, but they were local or regional to whatever that contest was. Mm-hmm. And $800, even, you know, back in the early 2000s, seems like it was still affordable. We spent quite a bit of money on buying the best meats and the best of everything, practicing these things. There was a lot of cooking in people's backyards on the 250 gallon and some of the other accoutrements we would bring along. It was an expensive hobby.
Man, I went to the Donnie Bray School of Competition Barbecue. The OGs remember Donnie Bray, Warren County Pork Choppers. And he bought every bit of his meat out of the case at a Kroger. And he was absolutely crushing it that year. And that's why we were doing it. We were just going and getting Kroger meat. You know, who knows what they spin the wheel this week. That's what they got, you know. Right. And he did really good with it, you know. These days, man, it's everything is so amped up and so much more expensive to do it and do it right. Yeah, ain't no wonder why everybody wants to be sponsored.
Well, if you're on the national stage, you look at people's tents, you look at their trailers, the names of the companies that they have sponsorships with are huge players in the market. They're not going to Walmart and just grabbing something. If they don't get a sponsorship, they're not using that brand.
Yeah. Speaking of competition, shout out to my buddy there, Canned Meats Competition Barbecue Team. He's a pro staffer here with Team Smokeslinger. Also pro staffer with Super 55 Drum Smokers. And he was number two in the nation last year for the Rib Cook-Off Association. Congratulations, brother. Usneel's got a question. He said, would you guys cook a brisket fat cap down on the Smokeslinger? Because this is where I was headed next, is cooking methods. And absolutely, I would start off fat cap down for a while if your fire is directly below the brisket. However, if you're going to cook on a full size, which is the 24x48, and you want to cook in offset mode, I would cook exactly the same as offset mode. Two things will happen if you cook in a Smokeslinger, which a Smokeslinger, for the guys that are watching that don't know what that is, go to, by the way, how do we pull up that thing? We're told we got a thing in here. Where do we? I think it's right here. Bam. Get your quote at smokeslinger.com. I made that earlier. Smokeslinger is a direct heat smoker. How do I turn it off now that it's on? Hide?
Yeah.
Anyway, the full-size Smokeslinger is a 24x48 direct heat cooker, direct heat smoker pit, if you want to call it that. You can use it like a multi-tool. And if, by the way, Smokeslinger does sponsor this podcast because Dave and I said so. And it's got, the full size has two charcoal baskets underneath, tuning plates, and cooking grates. And it's really awesome because you can set up like a fire in this side and your brisket on this side or vice versa. And you can run exhaust out this side or exhaust out that side. It's the only one on the market I know of that does not have smokestacks on it, out the lid. And it's very on purpose. It's not because we're trying to be cheap. It's because it's very functional this way, because we want to get that air mass. We want it to, if we're doing reverse flow mode, which you can do that too, we want it to come around and then go out the side. So all of that smoke and that air flow is kissing that brisket on the way out. That's what we're after. So yeah, that's how I would cook on a Smokeslinger. Reverse flow mode or direct heat, fat cap down. Or if you're in offset mode, fat cap up. You always want to put your fat cap towards the heat source where it's coming from to protect. And then the point side of the brisket should face into the wind is how I always do it. What do you think about all that?
Well, Frank, Dave, you're I think you're hitting all the right points. But one of the things, you know, you mentioned beforehand when it came to the seasoning, the salt, pepper, garlic. But let's get into that wood choice. Would you go with a post oak, a hickory, or mesquite for authentic flavor? What are you adding to your firebox?
I'm always a blended wood guy. So, like, if I'm looking for a lot of heat content, a good coal bed, I'm starting with post oak. Post oak's got a more mild flavor. You're not really going to get like this intense smoke flavor. You're just going to get a pleasant smoke flavor. Cherry is the other thing I use a lot up here. It's harder for me to get, so I'm a little more picky when I use it, but I do use it quite often. Cherry's going to give you a darker color on whatever you're cooking with. It's also a lot sweeter. It's super sweet. You know, it's one of my favorites. And then I have a boatload of hickory up here. We got a lot of hickory. And so I'll usually blend hickory in with something else. If I'm doing briskets and I have plenty of post oak, I'll stick with that. But if I'm doing like a bunch of briskets and my wood source is getting kind of lean, I'll go ahead and blend in some hickory with it and stuff like that. But what I'm finding, people around here, where I'm at in Missouri, they don't like a really heavy smoke flavor. And that's what you're going to get if you burn 100% hickory. You're going to be able to taste it. You know, that's just kind of what I do. That's my order of importance. Now, Aaron, my buddy, Mr. Voigt, is from Arizona. And basically, I think the only thing they got down there is mesquite. And so those guys like really go for the mesquite. And mesquite, there's a skill to using that. You know, you want to make sure you get your coal bed established and you want to make sure it's pretty dry. Otherwise, it's just going to be so intense. You know, it's very intense. Yeah.
You know, what it sounds like we've been discussing a lot with the low and slow, but you know, you brought up the smoke slinger. The smoke slinger allows us to go hot and fast. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking here that versus the 225 to 250 temperature, that if we're going to go over to the hot and fast method, that's right, hot and fast, we're mm-hmm. going to raise that temperature up to 300 to 325 degrees, mm-hmm. and we're going to have that brisket done in 5 to 6 hours versus as long as 16 to 18 hours. Yeah. I see this method is becoming very popular in competition where time is tight, but it still delivers some killer results. Have you seen the same?
Yeah. So the important thing to remember with hot and fast, like I have cooked a brisket in 4 to 6 hours in competition. And the catch there is you don't have time for all that collagen fat to render. You're not going to be able to work it like we can on a 12-hour cook and a 12-hour rest. You're not going to be able to do that. So in that situation, you got to trim, if not all of it, you got to trim most of it off. And then you're also looking for how consistent your cut of meat is. So that's why they wind up doing a little perfectly formed square when they're doing a hot and fast brisket. But you're also looking for super high marbling. I mean, you got to have that really, really high amount of intramuscular fat and inject if you're going to pull it off. So you're going to have less fat to render. So it's going to render better and faster. Plus, you want to make sure that you got plenty of moisture in there so that since you're cooking hot, it's just not all just going to drip out. You know, I think a small injection needle and no particulate in your injection, it needs to be emulsified all the way so you don't clog the needle and inject a whole bunch of little bitty places, you know, a little bitty spots tight together. That's what I've seen with these guys.
I'm going to nerd out on you. Being that this is the Barbecue Nerd Podcast.
It is the Barbecue Nerd Podcast.
Here is where the nerding out comes from. You ready? All right. Method that some people are familiar with. It's kind of new. Not that new as far as, you know, you low and slow and hot and fast. But new in the sense that people are just starting to catch on to this. Ready for the nerd part?
Let's go.
Sous vide brisket, the science nerd method.
Yeah.
So here's where we get fancy, Frank. Sous vide brisket. You heard me right. This is where barbecue meets science. You vacuum seal your brisket, drop it in a water bath at about 155 degrees for 24 to 36 hours. Then finish it off with a quick sear or a blast in the smoker for that smoky finish. You get precision because you can control doneness down to the degree. You get texture. It's incredibly tender, but you might miss out on that traditional bark unless you finish it right. As far as flavor, you can add liquid smoke or spices, and I'm completely against liquid smoke, although places like Restaurant Depot, there it is, readily available. You put that right there in the bag, but nothing beats a final touch on the smoker. And the thing you don't want to skip out on is that final sear or smoke session, because this is where the magic happens. And it gives you that traditional barbecue feel. You got to go there.
I think I need to make one of those for this show. When Dave goes, I'm going to call it going all Dave on us. I think I'm going to have to make a Frank with a thumbs down emoji thing to pop up on the screen so I can veto the movement. No, actually, in all honesty, yeah. So I'm not really sure how I would do that. I know that's what the common way of doing it is, but I'm almost thinking like if I was going to do that, I would probably, and I don't know that this would work. I have no idea. Somebody can try it, but I would want to smoke it first and then bring it up with some flavor inside first, like some real smoke flavor. Probably get it up to like 135, 140, something like that. Yank it off of there, vacuum seal that thing, and stick it in the dang sous vide thing. I have no idea time and temperature on that. Like, you got to play with that, I guess. But since it's in a vacuum bag, I guess you can let it roll for however long you want. There's no oxygen, so no bacteria growth, etc. Pop it out of there, and then, Lord help us, we got to sear this thing somehow and get a bark. So we can't overcook it in the sous vide, but we can sure break down all that intramuscular awesomeness in there.
Oh, yeah.
I guess. And then I still think I would rather just cook a brisket for 12 hours. I'll be honest with you, because like when me and Bingo are out in the driveway and I get Bingo all fired up, if you don't know what Bingo is, that's my big old crazy awesome offset. I get that Bingo fired up and we throw about 6 briskets or 7 briskets on there and we just go burn on the bottom, pound it with air and good smoke flavor. You know, about, you know, start out around 245 or so and gently coast up for a while until we get up to our peak right there, right before we wrap, and then hit it about 275, the rest of the cook, get 12 hours in on it, pull it out, and then just let it sit open it up, let it sit until the internal temperature gets down to 141. Because if you don't, it's going to overcook. And then I've got this awesome Avantco warmer, and that's where she rests for 12 hours. Wrap it back up, stick it in that warmer, go to bed. Actually, the way I do it, this is the trick right here. I figure out what time I'm going to serve tomorrow. I start an hour before that. So it's a 24-hour situation. So if I'm going to serve dinner at 5 o'clock tomorrow, I would put that brisket on at like 4 o'clock today. I would be done about 4 in the morning is when I would be done. Pull it out of the pit, let that thing breathe off, wrap it back up, stick it in the camber or in the warmer, go to bed. I am not going to wake up until probably after lunch, you know, 2 o'clock. Go back out there, get ready to roll, make sure everything's cool. Then we're going to take it to the location. We're going to slice it in front of everybody. And that whole brisket, you'll see, I got pictures of me with a brisket. I'm holding my hand like this or like this. And that brisket's just bat wings hanging down. You know, it's the greatest thing in the world to me.
You wanted to go unfiltered. I took the filter right off.
I did. Yeah. You're totally.
You wanted.
This is the Barbecue Nerd Podcast. There's no
way. I got one more for you. Okay. One more. Now, listen, put on your fancy boots, put on your fancy pants. I'm going to give you the one that we're going to call Grandma's Secret Weapon. It's called the Braise. Okay.
I blew a crock the other day.
You blew a crock right. As soon as you heard the word that I was braising, blew itself off. Braising your brisket. This is less about the pit and more about the pot. You can season your brisket, sear it, and then cook it in a Dutch oven with broth, wine, or even beer at 300 degrees for 3 or 4 hours. The liquid adds another layer of depth. It's super forgiving if you're new to brisket. And, you know, the downside, unfortunately, is that you're not getting any smoke flavor. But you can cheat with a quick smoke before searing. So this is for those that are sort of new to this. This is that, again, I call this the grandmother method, because this is what people did. In fact, today, even in my area, they love the crock pot. They love their Instapot. And this kind of, you know, fits that modality of another way to be able to cook for those that have to go to work. They have responsibility. Yeah. And, you know, when everybody else at work is going outside to take a cigarette break, their smoking break, you and I are going to take a smoking break on a brisket. We come back to work 16 hours later.
Well, you know, Al Fregone just did a video not very long ago, just a few weeks ago, on his YouTube channel, I think, definitely on Instagram, about braising a brisket in an iron pot over live fire. It looked awesome. I think he made a shepherd's pie, maybe. I can't remember. I don't remember what he made out of that thing, but it was, anything Al Fregone cooks is going to be unbelievable. Just accept it out the gate. Unless he tells you up front it's not going to be, because he's testing something like a direct fired brisket, like over open fire, which, you know, Dustin and I were talking about that today earlier, and it kind of has a hamburger, like a grilled hamburger taste, you know, like the grease is dripping in the fire and kind of just like that greasy smoke. You know, you want to try to avoid that, which, you know, I'm not really a fan of that, I don't think. So, but yeah. Cool. We got any questions in here? Oh, David and Beth Suss are in the room or in the house. Got to hang out with them. What a good time. Good to see you guys. How are you two affiliated? What's your story? The barbecue police is asking you, Dave.
we go back to, what did we say, 2016?
Smoker Builder.
That's right, with Smoker Builder.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had this dreams and aspirations that I would get plans and be able to build my own offset smoker with zero experience, zero machinery, zero welding, nothing at all. It's just as simple as you just buy some plans and magically all of the knowledge will just absorb in. We're just, you know, you put your head on the paperwork. And through diffusion, the words come right through the brain and you figure it all out. In reality, it doesn't work that way. So I sat on these plans for a while and then decided, well, just buy a different set of plans. And with that said, not only will I do that, I'll go ahead and build a trailer, because I've never trailered anything. So why not start in that position too? Because with bigger is better. Eventually, you know, I got to the point that reality was reality. And Frank and I came to some talking, and it was much better off that I went with my dream being that that was fully built, and use my skills and my techniques and my knowledge to be able to fabricate meat and prepare it in different methods that Frank would be able to educate me on. And that being on the cooking tool, that being the smoker. So the way that I equate this is that Frank was able to provide to me the vehicle, and I was able to provide the fuel for that vehicle, that being the different foods. We can all have 15, 20 different cookers, but if you don't have the foods to put on there and the methodology to preparing them, then it's a car without fuel. You don't have the way to get there. I needed both sides. He had the car. I had the fuel. It was a good mix together.
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, that he asked. So, yeah, basically, there's a whole lot of smoker builder DNA out there in the barbecue world that, you know, even I forget about. But, yeah, Smoker Builder got started in 2010. We started selling plans, and just like Dave, a lot of different guys, you know, we've ran into over the years that needed help figuring out how to build a pit. And anyway, that's where Dave came into the world. What was that? 2016 or so?
Yeah.
I think we traced it back to 2016.
Yep.
But yeah, so we have a free website you can join. It's our private behind the scenes community. Doesn't cost a dime. It's called smokerbuilderu.com. Smokerbuilderu, it's right down there in the bottom of the thing. And I've got a little thing on there about a free fire management course. If you're going to be a barbecue nerd, you're going to have to learn how to run a fire, you know, and that's kind of what this course is about. Right now, it focuses primarily on offsets and reverse flows, actually hybrid offset reverse flows as well. And you can just learn how to run a pit. Other stuff coming soon. I think we're getting ready to work on, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're getting ready to work on a smokeslinger course in there too.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of that. Yeah. Anybody else got questions? We can stick around here for a couple more minutes. Main issue I've got is I'm empty. So we have to fix that. And it's way up there. But yeah. Anyway, little shout out here to our sponsor real quick. Slinger. I'm learning how to run all this stuff here. Bam. Smoke Slinger pits are direct heat smokers. And we have a brand new 94-gallon offset called the Liberty 94. And Dave does sales. And I do all the stuff that's like computer related. And my wife, Lisa, does all the logistics and the shipping and the accounting. And then our buddy, Dustin, is actually the guy that created this amazing pit called the Smoke Slinger. And he is in Kaufman, Texas. That's where these things are all built. A few of our people in the comments here that all have pits. And would encourage you, if you don't know anything about it, head on over to Facebook. We have a free Facebook group over there called Smoke Slinger Pit Owners Group. And if nothing else, you'll get a lot of laughs out of all the awesome food and good times and, you know, guys like me and Dave and Dustin hanging out in there. So, but anything you want to add, Dave?
The only thing I'd add is, you know, when we're talking about brisket, certain blunders that can occur, things that, you know, you should look out for is under seasoning your meat. Depending upon who my audience is when I'm cooking. There's times that I don't use enough. There's other times I use too much. I find that depending upon the age of the group that I'm with, that their palates are completely different, older population versus a younger population. Another thing is getting all too comfortable with utilizing all of our different temperature gauges. It is important to be able to use something like a thermopen, for example, to make sure that we're aiming for that 195 to 203 temperature in the thickest part, but we shouldn't constantly be checking. You know, if you're looking, you're not cooking. That's the metaphor that we use. Cutting your brisket the wrong way. You always want to slice against the grain for maximum tenderness. And of course, it happens all the time. Everybody goes through this. Your meat gets stuck in the stall and you start to get nervous and then you're rushing. Do not skip the rest. If you've already put 16 hours into that brisket, 18 hours in, look, you know, sometimes people have to wait a little bit longer. Do not skip that rest. If you skip that rest, then you're not allowing the meat to redistribute those juices and everything ends up on your cutting board instead of being retained back into the meat. I would say that's... Yep. It's really like the thing where people get uneasy. They got to get it out.
Yeah. 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 You got to get into it. Yeah. Patience, grasshopper.
Patience.
You know, something else about that too is about slicing. One more thing you mentioned about cutting across the grain, and we got this complex situation where there's grain going two different directions. So the way that I handle that is we come up to where the fat and the point meet. And then right there at the thinnest part of the flat and right where it gets into the point, it starts to get thick, cut right there, straight across the brisket, pull the point and the flat off to the side or the point side or moist side off to the side a little bit, and then start slicing on your flat. And if you're flat, the grain is like this, you're just going to cut across the grain like that. It's almost like a diagonal of sorts on the point side. You know, where you cut, you're going to have that facing you where you cut it. And then you're going to cut long way, the long direction through that thing. That's typically the way that I slice it. And you'll get the best bite, I think, like that. Fat is flavor. The other part of this thing. Do not cut the good fat out. And even if your kids are complaining, you know, make them eat it. They need it. I believe in that. It's better than vegetable fat all day long for you. So here we go. Brandon Sykes is making me blush. Brandon, big shout out to you, brother. Thank you for being an officer of the law there with your blue thing there. Says, I think Frank Cox, if you didn't make all these videos, wouldn't have much to learn. We wouldn't have learned much. Appreciate that, buddy. And the question we've been waiting for that we forgot to even think about is, when are we doing this thing? I think we said Mondays. Didn't we say Mondays?
I believe we agreed upon Mondays. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Monday nights. The reason for that is mostly because the YouTube audience is most active at that point on the Smokeslinger channel. Anyway, that's kind of what I'm thinking. What, about 7 o'clock? Central time, 8 o'clock your time.
Sure.
Do you get in trouble if you're busy at that time?
I'm always in trouble. There's no way around that. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'm in trouble anymore or not. It seems like we're just like cohorts, me and her. So just kind of we're always both just rolling. So yeah. So I think it's Monday nights. That's what it sounds like to me for the Barbecue Nerd Podcast. What else are we going to do on this show? Are we going to interview people?
I think we're going to bring people on. We're going to start to explore other cuts of meat. For example, you know, tonight we discussed the great American brisket. What about the Argentinian brisket? What about that vacío? What about combining the skirt steak, the bavette, the flank steak, all in one? What I found to be the most juicy, tender, delicious brisket that I've ever made.
Yeah.
It all came from that vacío. So I think that in the future, we come back to the brisket again. But now we start to talk about other meats from other parts of the world and how they integrate back into that traditional Texas barbecue. I think we also get back into knives, for example. You talk about how you're cutting. Well, are we using a serrated blade, a scallop blade, an electric knife? Are we getting fancy and pulling out that meat slicer and slicing it like we would do? Say like a corned beef or a brisket, which again is a brisket anyway. I mean, there's so much here to be able to explore when we're just talking about brisket.
Man, do you remember that Zoom call we had on Smoker Builder U? By the way, all those live Zoom calls and all the stuff we did, that's all in the live replays section on Smoker Builder U. Dude, that thing went for 3 hours or something, I think. Yeah. We talked about pastrami and sausage and curing. And my gosh, that went, I don't know how many beers I had. It was a lot. I was in the garage, I think, where the beer fridge is.
That was a busy night.
It was a busy night. Yeah, we had a lot going on. One more thing here. Talk about what protein you cook with and what type of wood works best for smoking with it. Yep, we can do that. That's a great topic. So, all right. Well, what do you think, Dave? Should we close her off? We're going to try to keep it, what, an hour on our future podcasts?
I think we've had a very successful evening. Like anything in life, I don't like to put constraints on it. If we run a little bit over, that's just the way that it goes. It's like that brisket again. We expected 14 hours. It went for 16. It's just the way that it goes.
Yeah. Well, hey, guys, on behalf of Dave, this is Frank Cox. You know, we're the Barbecue Nerd Podcast. Appreciate you tuning in. And, you know, we'll see you on the funny papers next time. Take it easy.